first order of business, welcome everyone anyway, too, is the minutes last meeting, as soon as I can get a hold of them again. Any suggestions on minutes?
April 1, is that right?
They should be right in your, with your agenda on the front of the page.
On the paper clip.
July 13th.
Oh,
yeah.
There.
This. Yeah, July 13th, actually.
In the back of the phone.
Well, since you were there, if you like them, then I'll back you up on them.
Okay. Well, I'll read over here real quick, if you don't mind. I'd like to... Yeah.
Let Bill, since his name's all over.
Well, I make motions in second to just try and keep the meeting moving along here, so, yeah. It's about like Farm Bureau. There's sometimes I get frustrated. Come on, guys, if you want to do this, let's get a motion and, you know, get the meeting moving along here, so. Okay, I'll move we accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. This sounds like the Board of County Commissioners, yeah. You know. One makes the motion, the other seconds it. The chair doesn't vote, so it's just yep. the two guys.
The other two, they're
around the show.
Next year's meeting's already. Looks like Mike's got a schedule for us.
Time to schedule. Well, thought I'd see what you guys thought. First question is, are the four meetings enough? Everybody's comfortable with the four meeting format like we had last year? Okay.
Then, for the most part, yeah. Yeah.
Then we just need to find, you know, dates or times that work for you guys, you know, moving forward, and so we can, you know, get them calendared and out there way in advance. The main one is going to be this, the priority at this point is going to be the first meeting of next year, the February meeting where you do the formal adoption of the weed list and all that stuff. So, I don't know if you guys want to, when was it last year? It was like the first Monday or the first Tuesday or.
It was the first Monday in February, and
I think all our meetings are the first Monday of the month, month.
Yeah.
Is that
so? Mm-hmm. The only difficulty with that one is it's kind of early in the year. Mike goes on furlough, and so I'd like him to be there for the meeting.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So if we could shoot for more like middle to end of the month, that would be better for us. But all the rest of them can be, you know, first Monday of whatever month, that doesn't bother me.
So if we figure the third Monday of February?
Let's see. That'd be the 15th.
Or you want to go later? Does that give you, what, 2 weeks back?
There's two more Mondays.
Yeah, they go the 22nd.
Okay. Right now, I'm trying to schedule knee surgery, and every date that has come up, the scheduler has found that date to you know, it doesn't matter. I may not be here. So,
22nd, you're okay with that?
Yeah, that would be
so. Okay. That first one, maybe we shoot for Feb 22nd, and then.
And that's a Monday, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And then after that, you guys just want to stay. The format we had this year was April, July, and December. Do you want to go with the first Monday for those 3 months then? Go back to the first Monday format?
Yeah.
It works.
So okay.
It has worked. First Monday in April is the 4th. First Monday in July is the 4th. Oh, so we have to... Yeah, we don't want to be...
No. Why don't we move 1 week? To the 11th.
Yeah, just do the second Monday then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so April 11th,
Oh, April 11th also.
Or are you just talking about just for July?
July,
yes. I misunderstood you. Okay, you want to, is that how we want to do it then? So
that works.
Stick with April 4th and then go to July 11th.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then December, go back to the first Monday.
Yeah.
Which is the 5th. Okay. So there we go.
Okay. I can shove it over, Ken.
No, I can read
it. Borderhouse reads there.
Close.
Yeah.
My family.
Reach. Carmen, did you bake the cookies?
I did.
Mike was trying to say he did. You know, he said if Carmen says she did, she really did. Yeah. Just to throw him under the bus. You know.
I don't know anything about this.
You don't. Thank you for the cookies,
You're
Carmen.
Welcome.
You
bet.
Don't listen to Billy. He drinks.
Okay.
Especially in the mornings.
No, seriously, I'm trying to schedule for knee surgery, okay? And this woman she's getting kind of frustrated with me, and she says, well, is there any other dates that I need to work around? And I said, sure, but I don't know the dates yet and stuff, and you know, and like the North Carolina Court Conference, I'm one of the presenters, and she, you know, she goes right, and I called her and told her, no, do not pick this week, the 12th, 13th, and 14th of January. And sure enough, she does, and so, anyhow. Yeah, so anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got that done. That was pretty painless.
Mm-hmm.
Bee pollinator?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on this real briefly with you guys. With the agenda, I attached this thing just so you can glance at it. It's real brief, but we're getting the whole pollinator and honeybee thing is becoming, you know, a bigger deal. And we know some of the other counties that adopted like real generalized statements as to how they handle or acknowledge that situation, and it really kind of started rearing its head as we were doing the knotweed surveying up in Washougal. We got asked by a lot of people because, you know, when you treat knotweed is typically when it's in flower and the honeybees are all over it. So, you know, people are more knowledgeable, and this is kind of a high priority or high profile, I guess, would be thing. So anyway, put together something, and what I tried to do is keep it short and condensed because, you know, this is just kind of an acknowledgement that we, you know, understand and you know, we're on board with being, you know, good pollinator friendly folks. We're doing that now. We have always done that. So like I said, it's not like we're doing anything wrong or we need to reinvent the wheel. But anyway, just having something that we can print off and hand to somebody if they say, you know, what's your guys' position on pollinators, bees, that kind of thing.
It's good to have an active position ahead of time on that. It's like mm-hmm. you say, more and more people are knowing about it. So
yeah. Well, and it's been in the news so much, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see people ask, and, you know, all the publicity of the colony collapse disorder stuff and the confusion between insecticide versus herbicide. And but like I say, we've always taken a real careful approach to that, you know, with what we use and what we put out chemical wise and timing wise. We, you know, with what we do, you know, controlling invasives and noxious, it's typically not our position to spray things or apply herbicide when things are in full flower. That's typically the worst time of the year to put chemical on anything anyway. You know, knotweed's kind of the exception, but just like I say, just letting people know that we are paying attention and we acknowledge it. That's just kind of what we tried to get done with that.
Mike, on two points on that. Number one is this policy just for the weed board, or is it a countywide for all applicators saying, you know, this is our stand on everything, on, you know, when you deal with other people that are, you know, I don't care, certified hay program or what, you know, and stuff, or are you just, is this policy just speaking about your crew?
At this point, it's vegetation management, I think. Would that be fair, Kevin?
Yeah.
Just the county crew?
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is I wanted to ask, is knotweed, are you broadcast spraying or are you doing injection?
We do both. Depends on,
okay.
Sometimes, for example, you run into stuff that's too small diameter to inject.
Okay.
And, you know, we've got some herbicide combinations now that are really effective, and it's, of course, much less labor intensive. And in certain, you know, every infestation we kind of evaluate it on its own, but mm-hmm. in certain situations, if we've got a patch and we can broadcast spray it, and it's kind of meets the criteria of a common sense application, mm-hmm. it's a lot quicker and at least as effective as injection. So, like I say, we just kind of play those one by one. You know, some of them, it's kind of pretty much a common sense deal. But you know, if you can do injection, if it's standing in the water, you know, right at the edge, you know, things like that, or some people, some private property owners, like this grant work, I'm sure some people are gonna insist on not having, you know, broadcast spray, and we'll you know, address their concern and go injection. You know.
So what do you have for an all natural organic, alternative?
Fire.
Okay.
No, yeah,
this would have been a good year for it.
We're on the right side of the state to say that.
Yeah, really.
Right side, I don't know that I'd say that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, boy. You hear that, people want the magic bullet, but it's not out there.
It's not out there, yeah. And, you know, I was going to say, too, is, you know, for us, raising berries, spotted wing Drosophila is quite an insect problem this year, you know, or has become more so. And so we are having to spray insecticides during bloom. And so it's one of these deals, it's a very touchy deal and everything. But we've done well on our farm with, we spray it at night. And stuff. So, Doug has to change irrigation at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night, and so we'd load the sprayer up, and then when he's done done moving irrigation at 11 or 11:30, he'll go out and spray, and then I was doing it, you know, having to sit out there and wait for it, but anyhow, and then but he's worked out, he just goes out and sprays, and we have to spray weekly for spotted wing Drosophila. So,
see, the herbicide stuff, the standard MO is, you know, hitting it, you know, translocation is what everything's about, you know. So when the plant's in that life cycle where it's flowering and trying to produce seed, it's just not translocating, or it's late enough in the year that everything is hardened off, it's sun baked, and the leaves are leathery, and it just sheds it, you know. So almost exclusively, our strategy is to get to stuff before then. If it's in flower, we're cutting and bagging or pulling, or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
That was that.
Okay. So you're going to do some more work on that and then bring it back to us in February to adopt, or how do you want to do that?
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, I to my mind, I think it was pretty close to a finished product. I wanted to get some input, and let staff get some input, but we could probably adopt it now.
Well, we haven't seen it.
Okay, I attached it to the email that went out.
Okay.
Yeah, it shows we didn't read it.
That's okay. Yeah. My wife didn't tell me.
Is it in the packet?
It is not.
Oh. No. Okay.
No, because he was looking at it. But I don't see it.
Yeah.
No, I can put it down and
copy of it right now.
I sure do.
I'll make a copy of it. Then you guys can take it with you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Or we can adapt it.
We have to apologize that, my wife didn't necessarily give me the email.
So it's a quick read. It's two extended paragraphs. I mean,
along that line, have you had pollinator services that have approached you guys about concern about it, or is it just strictly the private landowners?
Private landowner and the state weed board has really gotten, you know, involved with, you know, trying to work with the beekeeper groups and doing a little independent research of their own, and again just trying to make everybody happy, and you know, implementing some common sense. And really, I think the linchpin of the whole thing is convincing people that, you know, we're reminding people of the difference between herbicide and insecticide. You know, the herbicide, almost all the research shows that the herbicide has such minimal, if any, harm to bees. The adjuvants are what you really have to pay attention to. You know, some of the adjuvants, the oils,
the stickers,
penetrating oils and stickers, and now you can cause some problems if you're not, you know, paying attention to what you're doing. But say we've always, happy to say we've always been pretty attentive to that.
Well, I get real frustrated is with the North Willamette Hort Society. We have quite a bit. We work with the Xerces Society and one thing another, and an OSU, you know, and stuff. And it's like a few years back was, you know, you say the herbicide versus insecticide. Well, a few years back they had the big deal that, oh, pristine fungicide was causing the colony collapse. And, you know, we'd gone through, you know, all these different ones, you know, that, oh, it's this, and then they disprove it. And then they go to the next one and they disprove it. So a few years back it was pristine as a fungicide that they were going, oh, that's what's causing it, because pristine came out the same time that colony collapse started happening
time
and stuff. Yeah. Well, now it's the neonics that everybody's looking at, and they're going, well, it's, you know, it's those, and they're going, but the OSU and the people are sitting there going, we can prove that there seems to be no correlation between them and stuff, between the neonics and the, other than the fact that they came out again about the same time as the colony collapse started to occur. So, yeah.
Everybody's looking for that one thing, and I think it's more likely that it's several things.
Well, and it was interesting with what the OSU researchers pointed out. They said there's always five things that are always in every colony collapse, you know, hive. Number one, there's plenty of food, which is ironic. They aren't hungry. There's plenty of brood, but the brood is dead because they quit feeding them. And they said, you know, if it's insecticides, they expect to see dead bees. And they said there's no dead bees. And I forget now, there's two others. And I can't remember what the deal is. Whether it was that the queen is always still left there or what. But anyhow, there was five things. And they go, you know, we have no understanding of why those five items are always present in every colony collapse. Yeah. So, anyhow.
Is it realistic for us to say that you're not going to apply anything that would be acutely toxic to bees or other pollinators? Is that just like already a policy?
Yeah, it is. I mean, our you know, the chemicals that we apply, you know, we do, you know, our due diligence as far as making sure that there's nothing that we know about that points to the fact, you know, at this time. I mean, okay. Something could come out next week, but try our best to stay on top of what the latest, greatest, and, you know, we don't use that many products here. We have our Roundup and our Milestone and our Garlon. I mean, we have a real small spectrum of stuff that we use, so it's not too hard to stay on top of it. But to the best of our knowledge, and based on the most current information that we have access to, that's kind of what I base that statement on. So, I mean, and if that were to change, if we were to find out tomorrow that, you know,
Milestone
is acutely toxic to honeybees, we would have to do some reevaluating. I mean, I don't know that we would abandon it, but we'd sure have to have some processes or procedures. It'd have to be topic for discussion, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of along what Kent's asking, maybe, is where you, the last part of that sentence says, under any circumstances. That's pretty limiting down the road if something happens, like Bill sprays at night. Do you want to limit yourself that much?
You know what? I'd be more than happy to tweak that. I thought I was kind of giving myself a little wiggle room with the when applied as directed is known. You know, I mean, if we're following the directions and all the research and literature that we have access to doesn't give us any, you know, I think, you know, we're kind of doing the best we can with the information at hand.
Play devil's advocate. What if they know, or they think they know, versus is this stating that if we know that it's acutely toxic, but what if they know, or somebody in Germany knows that herbicide?
Well, or on the internet. The internet is probably great.
I mean, of course, I'm just, like you said, playing devil's advocate, not thinking that they might say that they know that it's toxic. Like, as an individual, if I'm complaining to you about it and I say, well, I know that it's toxic because it killed my hive.
But wouldn't the ultimate tiebreaker be what the research says, you know, what the research says, what the label says, what the...
Yeah, but you can probably find research on both sides.
Yeah. You know, that's possible. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's possible.
So
Roundup's
a real good example. If you want to go off just the label, but then you're going to have the label be specific that it's not.
Okay, well, I can do a little wordsmithing on that sentence.
Yeah, maybe so that the sentence... So it's not so definitive in our statements there.
That's easy enough.
You know, kind of that we will endeavor not to use anything that is deemed to be, you know, acutely toxic or something or other.
I think you had it right here at the second sentence in the first paragraph when you were saying that we'll make every reasonable effort in controlling. I mean, I think something along those lines.
Okay.
We'd make every reasonable effort to not use product.
Well, and the first sentence, if it were me, is I'd take out the last part of that first sentence is under any circumstances, take that out. Yeah. And say, you know, that, you know, when directed is known to be, acutely toxic to bees or other pollinators, just period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Under, okay, that's...
And I have the, I think it's the third sentence down there is, let's see.
Staff
will make every reasonable effort to avoid contact with pollinators, and we do not typically apply herbicides when plants are flowering or when bees are most active. Kind of, well, but you know, you already admit that there are those circumstances, and you go, well, yeah.
Is it necessary, I guess, is probably the question, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of when you know.
Okay, so what would you like me to pull out of that?
Well, or put in there, or, you know, when bees are most active, and then, or, and what, except when necessary, if you'd want to add to it or something rather.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and it's one thing for those of us to know. It's another when you get this guy that, boy, I looked it up on the internet, and you know.
And that's part of what the driver was here is we get, we do get those, you know, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
They see the spray truck go by, or they see. So yeah, like I say, I was. Like with that, that's why I kind of stuck with, you know, reasonable effort, because it's not going to be, you know, nothing's perfect, but except when necessary, that's easy enough.
Mm-hmm. Like if everybody else
is like common sense, and I think common sense.
Let's open the window here, Kent, so we can get right out the window.
Exactly.
That's the problem with common. Is everybody's got some sense.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I'll tell you what. You know, and while we're just having a deal with Farm Bureau, and I brought it up at Farm Bureau, is that, you know, we deal with the public every day. And you sit there and you go, my gosh, the things these people come up with, and you know, and you're going, you know, they read it on the internet, and you know, and watermelons cause cancer because they're red, you know, or whatever, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And
there's the end of airtight,
Oh, you need yellow watermelons because the red watermelons cause cancer. You know, they've been genetically modified. You know, and they plant two different watermelons in each field, you know, so that they can breed and stuff. So there must be something wrong with those watermelons, you know. Anyhow, that's
So as far as this goes, then, like I say, both of those are really minor things that probably won't take 10 minutes to clean up. Just do you want to revisit this at the next meeting? And
not in a big hurry.
Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you guys want to adopt it, but wait for it to be.
Wait for it. Yeah. Okay.
I'll let you redo that.
So you guys are providing seed packets, for the flowering seed packets.
Yes.
Oh, if you wanted to make it even better, is you know, you could add in there not just for pollinators but for butterflies too. So
it is.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Bee and butterfly mix. Yep.
It's actually got a butterfly on the front of the.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, does it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's got a pretty butterfly and all kinds of.
People love it too. Oh. People go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They go like hotcakes.
Oh yeah.
Because I ran into people at one event that got some from our fair booth, and you know, their kids put them in a flower pot out of the back deck or whatever. They just went crazy over it because, you know, they're, you know, being bee and butterfly, they're, you know, real, the emphasis is on color. And
Well, I was proposing to Doug that, you know, we could go around the outside border of the field and work up a strip, foot and a half or 2 foot around the fence lines and plant it, and that way then, you know, everybody's, you know, look what we're doing.
Yeah.
Although the irony is our beekeeper admits that we're one of the best because we have flowering products all the way till October.
Right.
You know,
all different times of the year.
All different times. And so, you know, as far as the bee and butterfly stuff, we wouldn't really need to, but anyhow.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I don't know how much it would, how many packets you got.
Yeah, right.
There's always one down at the Clark County office. They've always got them sitting right
there. Oh, right there. Okay. If I keep hitting them up, we'll get another couple of hundred feet done.
He gets one every time, so you might ask him. He's probably got an extra one.
Start paying transients a nickel to stay in line and get your seat back.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right.
All right. Let's go. Weeds and trees of concern, creating a list.
Yeah, I want to get a little feedback from you guys. I kind of plagiarized this a little bit from King County. They have a weeds or trees of concern list that basically, what it kind of does is it opens the door to doing a little bit more education or you know, maybe having a brochure made. And the ones that we're getting, you know, more and more traffic on are the black locust and the hawthorn trees. And black locust just this year kind of became a hot button deal. And I've just kind of thought going forward that it may not be a bad idea to have that as kind of an addendum to our weed list, having, you know, so we could just kind of keep a running list of what this year's hot thing, you know, what we're getting the most complaints or call-ins about, even if it's not listed or it's not something we want to mandate control on or get, you know, get really in the system, but at least it's something that we can kind of keep an eye on, something we could do reports, document contacts from the public, you know, calls or whatever, and, you know, maybe, like say, if like with black locust, we're probably getting to the point where it might pay for us to investigate having some kind of informational brochures or something we can give the public. Because even though it's not on the list, we're getting a lot of traffic about it. So I don't know what you guys thought about that. It's a kind of a moving ahead, maybe sort of kind of kick it around sort of deal, but.
Is it strictly trees then, Mike?
No, it wouldn't be. Just the black locust was the one this year. But, I mean, we got it a couple of years ago. It was the wild rose, you know, that wash dot rose. Mm-hmm. Everybody was calling about wash dot rose. Some of the wilder cherry trees, you know, how they can be really aggressive in certain environments, you know. And like I said, the hawthorns, there's just this kind of oddball list of things. It kind of ebbs and flows from year to year. But just kind of having that in black and white somewhere, and if something, you know, gives us a little bit more inclined, I suppose, to pay attention to it over the long term, if it's something that's documented. So maybe there's something that is worthy of considering adding, or like I say, making it a little bit bigger piece of our education and outreach stuff, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you guys thought.
Well, and maybe induce more people to control them on their own.
Exactly, yeah, because that would be we would not have any, it wouldn't be a point of emphasis for us going out and knocking on doors and saying, hey, you know, you got black locust all over out here. It needs to be, you know, that wouldn't be in the cards at all. And be more like, you know, gee, would you like help with that mess?
Yeah, I would.
That kind of, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. We planted a field of blackberries this year, and my gosh, I think it's black locust that came in, and my gosh, I've never seen anything like that.
Tree of heaven, yeah, that stuff. It's all, some of those trees, they just go crazy.
And my gosh, so we had to send the crew out and kill them treat them with Roundup and stuff and everything, but gee whiz, man, you know, they were, you know, a couple of guys were half a day cleaning this field up.
Well, yeah, and people don't understand, like with the black locust specifically, you know, what we found is you almost have to kill the mature trees right where they stand. Once you cut them down, once you fall them, you got a mess. You know, they just go on hyper survival mode, and they start sending shoots out of the roots and out of the stump, and you've got a battle for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, whatever. If you kill it where it's standing, that way you've confirmed that it's dead because it doesn't leaf out. You know, you'd ideally do it like late summer, early fall. So next spring, you know that it's dead because it doesn't leaf out. And then you can fall the darn thing, get it out of there, and know that it's truly expired. But if you do it any other way, you're more likely than not, you're going to have a mess, you know. And people don't know that.
Yeah. Since we, you know, started treating the cambium layer you know, with pure Roundup is we've never had a trouble. Is whether it's locust or hazel brush was the one for down for us for years, and shoot, we found out how to do that. And it's like, man, we don't have any hazel brush left now at all. So anyhow.
Yeah, the big locust trees we started because some of them the Roundup worked fairly well, and some of what we started doing was punching 45 degree holes with a cordless drill in them and filling them up with straight milestone.
Oh, well, huh? Oh.
And, you know, that's that's about as guaranteed of a kill as you're going to get.
Really?
You know,
it's even more effective than Roundup.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And, of course, that Stinger would be the same deal probably of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the Pyralid. Yeah. I mean, I guess the rationale, I guess, is you know, everything about the milestone chemistry is based on effective translocations. Gets into that root mass quickly and efficiently and does what, you know, does its thing real quick, and it seems to be the cat's meow there. But, you know, we usually get calls after people have knocked a tree down. And, you know, they've got half an acre of locust trees that are 6 to 8 feet tall, and ship's kind of sailed, man. You got a problem, you know.
I had Glenn look up one that I noticed on the farm that I think it's bayberry, something like that. It's a thorny tree, and I've got a good-sized one, and all of a sudden I had beautiful colors, obviously a couple of years ago, and some berries on it. I mean, it was a beautiful tree, and I'm going, where did that come from? You know, 30, 40 feet high and nice tree. Well, then he looked it up, and it was the exact same thing. He said, don't cut it down, or if you do, make sure you work that stump, because he said, it's going to be a mess. And then I see that thing all over, above Daybreak up there on that, towards 219 or whatever up there. Not 219.
299.
299.
Yeah.
Along the west side of, what is that, 87th that runs north and south?
Something there, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a bunch of it in there. I've seen it, a few other ones. Yeah.
Huh, okay. That's a new one to me.
And I think it was bayberry.
Yeah.
Maybe that picture somewhere I brought in.
I swear there's one dang tree that gets started or something or other. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got berries. It's like the holly, you know. You get a berry dropped here and a berry dropped here, and pretty soon the whole understory is holly, you know. Doggone it.
Yeah.
So that'd be one to keep an eye on, because I'm seeing it all over too.
Well, and the ironic side for me is you know, in the years past was always willows and cottonwoods, and we'd get started in our berry rows and stuff, and we'd have to send somebody through. This year though was that, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it was black locust or hawthorn or what exactly, but anyhow, boy, it really took off.
Well, then, if you guys don't have any objections as we move into next year, I'm going to probably just start keeping an informal list and just kind of see where it goes, and, you know, bring it up as it warrants, you know.
Yeah. The other one I was having trouble with him was that wild honeysuckle too.
Oh gosh.
I found that. I was hiking up in a gorge up there by Bonneville, and I found a bunch of it up in there.
Yeah.
Choking trees that grows. Oh, a vine that can get about that big, maybe a little smaller.
What, chokes them out?
Didn't goes around girdle the fir trees. Yeah, and it choked it. And I've got some old pictures where
didn't
it
just find some of that?
Like killed the
trees. We had
girdled it enough or tightened up.
Yeah, it just keeps tightening up.
As the tree grows, it grows into it, I suppose.
Yeah, the vine keeps going all the way down. Nice orange flower.
It's dead now. River birch was the other one that came up this year that I've just been kind of jotting down. Post a note as the year went along. Danielle was seeing a lot of that in her facilities. And I'm not terribly familiar with it either.
It's an east side species, isn't it?
I'm not sure, honestly. I just, as I heard the chatter around the office, or we got oddball phone calls, I just kind of scribbled them down on an oddball post a note in my desk, because I was just thinking, you know, is this going to be one or two, or is it half a dozen, and does it change?
Well, to go with this, are you going to put together kind of a picture deal so people can identify it? Is it going to be something to hand out?
Well, we could. That would be the thing. If something showed up on this kind of informal list, or it could be as formal as we wanted to make it, but if something, say if we noticed it growing or an ongoing thing, like the black locust, it might make sense at a certain point to put together some kind of a single sheet thing with a couple of pictures and some, you know, just as a
recommendation,
public service kind of thing. You know, we're not going to come knocking on your door telling you got to do anything, but if you're having troubles with this, here's what we found is the best way to deal with it.
You made a little file, but Carmen kept a file and pictures. She could pull them off or just here's this
yeah.
file.
And
yeah.
And yeah. when they call.
Are any of these non-native?
Yeah, I would
Some
think
of them
so.
Are.
Yeah, well, you said River Birch, you think, is an east side?
If it's the one I'm thinking of, yeah, there's one on the east side that grows along the little streams feeding into the Columbia.
Well, locust is native. But, yeah, locust is native, but it's not native to here. It's like Alabama, Louisiana, that.
So, yeah, it's not native
to not native here.
And then the English hawthorn is not native to here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think wild honeysuckle's from around here.
Somebody brought it in and thought it was a cute deal, and probably my grandmother. You know,
beautiful, yeah, beautiful ornamental. And,
yeah. She was great about bringing all kinds of stuff in, and I'm sure, you know, you think back to the 1920s, and yeah, you know, there was a lot of things they brought in that they really, oh, this is really a choice plant.
You know? Yeah. Well, thanks to your grandma and people like her, we're gainfully employed.
Yeah.
Thank you, Grandma Zimmerman.
Yeah.
All right. We'll let you work on that.
Okay. Jeez.
Yeah.
I got to start tweaking this.
No, you're going to have to keep
out here some work.
Oh, yeah. Well, geez, yeah.
Cut my own throat.
Job security. No.
Yeah, it's security.
I don't have time because I'm too busy baking cookies.
Yeah. He's too busy lying.
Yeah.
He's
trying to make
All right. Grant work. Not wheat.
Okay, yeah, I just thought I'd give you guys a snapshot of that. We got this grant earlier in the year. It's a two-year, $40,000 grant through State Department of Ag, and we decided to kind of make the Washougal and the Little Washougal the point of emphasis. We've done control work up there before, but it's always been in the main corridors. And this thing kind of gave us an opportunity to get up and pursue the more source infestations up in the tributaries and stuff. So what we did is we used serial numbers to identify the private property owners that, you know, were on these stream corridors, drainages, etc. I think it was 504, just a little over 500 people that we sent letters out to.
Wow.
Know we're going to come survey.
Oh, not necessarily that you found knotweed on
those. No.
Okay.
In the survey area. Because, like I say, we started clear by Jones Creek, I mean, way up. And we, like I say, we did a real thorough run of, drainages, anywhere, you know, because, like I say, we just didn't really know what was up there. And before we do control work, having some feel for the scope and scale of what we're getting ourselves into is, you know, kind of important. And we got the money late enough this year. We couldn't do control work this year anyway. But Kara, Justin Colell, and myself went up there and ran around. We sent that first warning letter out, and then we waited a week, and we sent a postcard out that had pictures of knotweed and a little bit more specific information about the survey. Generated a ton of phone calls, which was the idea. You know, they both encouraged people to call. Carmen took a ton of calls. I took
Good.
A few calls. And we ended up giving, the way it worked out with the two warning letters, people ended up being provided with about a 2.5 week window between the first letter and the time we actually started surveying to call and express concerns. And Carmen kept us updated with spreadsheets every day on, you know, kind of the friend or foe list, you know, who says, you know, come on up, and who's a little apprehensive. So what that is, it enabled me to come in here every day and look at her spreadsheet and kind of prioritize who we needed to get FaceTime with. And by the end of that, by the time we started the survey, we only had 5 people out of over 500 that told us that they basically forbid us and refused to cooperate. So the strategy worked out, you know, really wonderful. We got up there and we got an amazing amount of ground walked in about 3.5 weeks. We covered a lot of ground up there, and kind of the takeaway from the whole thing, I think, is that we got some really good mapping done. We got a chance to walk, you know, areas up there that we had never had a chance to get into before, in that kind of detail especially. And really, we set the table for the control work for next year, in that, like the Little Washougal, for example, we eliminated probably the upper two-thirds of that watershed. Is you know, I'm pretty comfortable telling you that it is really clean. We were kind of shocked. The lower third is a mess. The main Washougal is, you know, a semi-mess. But, you know, when the crews go out to do control next year, they're not going to have to waste a ton of time wandering around. They're going to be able to go to the Little Washougal, we've got a specific location, highest point in the watershed they'll be able to start at, work their way down to where it hits the Washougal, go east of the Skamania County line, start there and come down the Washougal. It's a much more cohesive plan that's, you know, probably going to be, you know, much better long term, in that we've identified the highest points. You know, even with high water, moving stuff around, it's not going to go back upstream. You know, right. So the control work next year should be real orderly and organized and targeted. And instead of bothering 500 people, we'll only have to come back to the places where we've got knotweed and probably bother maybe 120 or 140 property owners instead of 500.
Yeah. Any of the five in that lower part?
They were kind of scattered all over, and as it turned out, they were all pretty easy workarounds. I mean, if you can access the property upstream and downstream, you can get a good look. And you know, this is not the way we would want to do it, but with this grant work, when we're doing something this comprehensive, the bullet that we have, you know, if need be, is if we can find it on their property, you know, knotweed is a B designate. We can, you know, if they were the one stick in the mud that was going to blow the whole thing up, we would send them a letter, and okay, we would send them a violation, and we would, you know, make them, you know, not that, again, nobody wants to go that way, but we could play that way. Because, you know, if we're putting all this work and time into it, the last thing you want is one goofball in a strategic location that is holding out and has a big chunk of knotweed that's going to be contaminating and, you know,
continually
ruining all your work, you know.
Yeah.
That would make no sense. So, but we got tremendous level of cooperation. Yeah. People received us well. We did a lot of good PR up there. I think people came away with a good feel for, you know, who we are and what we do.
So the people that are the five that might be against it, they're probably not against controlling knotweed. They're just against government agency?
I would say at least three of the five I would classify as privacy fanatics.
Yeah.
And one of them was a really, really rich guy that a different version of privacy fanatic. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember the fifth one, but they, like I say, one of them actually two of them were actually on seasonal drainages where the odds were fairly low anyway. But, you know, in the fall like that, the leaves have come off the trees enough that if you can go to the neighbor's house, you can look right down the way there. You know, I mean, they're clear. Mm-hmm. So I'm, okay. And I don't know that any of us would have expected going in that we would have five problem children out of 500. You know, that's about as good as it gets.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
People were real receptive to us, and went about as well as it could have.
Knowing that the Washougal comes out of Skamania County, is that right?
Yep.
Is Skamania County working on anything the same way?
Yes.
So, again, we wouldn't have... Hopefully, Skamania County wouldn't be the problem child.
Yeah, they'd actually gone... They gave us the specific serial number of where they quit. They'd actually come one property over the county line.
Okay.
So we knew right where to start, and we're in communication with them. So,
good.
Because, like I say, if the whole thing could all be for naught if you have, you know, somebody's not on the same page.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you think on this knotweed, do you think you're seeing a reduction in the knotweed, or are we still seeing, you know, an increasing problem?
Well, it's hard to say, and I think that's where this survey is going to give us a much better, much more firm ground to make that kind of judgment moving ahead. Because, like I say, we've done work up there before, but it was always in the main corridor. And, you know, if there's feeder streams, creeks, drainages that are, you know, beaver ponds that are dumping stuff down into the river, you know, you're just kind of chasing your tail. You know, I mean, we've done good work, and it has gotten better, but maybe not as dramatically as we would have liked to have seen. And that's where, you know, this grant really was kind of perfect for what needed to be done. It even specified in the grant language that it was for smaller, you know, they didn't want you just going out and shooting the whole thing on giant infestations. It was more targeted towards the cause, you know, towards smaller infestations, follow-up work, and that was, like I say, just for that watershed, that was exactly what we needed to do.
Is that grant something we need to start thinking about again? Are they going to re-offer it?
I don't know. Like I say, it was a 2-year. It was for 15 and 16, and like I say, by the time we got the funds this year, it was late enough we couldn't really do control work. Not that it would have been a great idea to anyway. I mean, we're so much better equipped, but like I say, the control work will happen next year. And beyond that, it's kind of a crapshoot. I really don't know.
Yeah, the state budget, the way they work, from 2 year cycles, June to June. So this one was just offered. I think we applied in March. It was offered in June or July of 15, and it'll go to June of 17.
So okay.
So we have those two years to use up the $40,000. We'll use up the bulk of it next summer and be done with it. And then the next opportunity won't come until 2017.
Well, and considering as dry as it was this year, did you see reduced efficacy on some of it because as dry as the season was?
No. Not really. I guess would be the short answer.
Of course,
there.
Maybe
it's hard to
change of season, but like
exactly. By the time we got to it, it was late enough in the year that a lot of it was starting to go dormant and senesce. So it's really hard to make any real broad brush statement on that, to be honest with you, Bill.
Yeah.
But at least we've GPSed the locations. Mm-hmm. We've got a map. See, when the guys go out next year, it's going to be it's not going to be just a willy-nilly, let's start here and wander this piece and wander that piece. It's,
mm-hmm.
start here and head down, and we can contact property owners in advance again. And
yeah.
We even ran a, did they run that ad, the thank you ad out there in the...
Yeah.
The Washougal Inn?
We ran an ad in the paper, the Camas Washougal Post Record,
mm-hmm.
leading up to, at the same time the letters were going out, and then we sent one out recently that just said, thank you for all the support.
Good.
Good. Hopefully some of the people in that watershed saw that. I don't know what their
circulation. Or their neighbors saw it, and their neighbors said, hey, I understand you were in the program, thank you, or whatever. Hopefully, yeah.
Well, it's a good gesture, because there's an undeniable part of that is PR. You're trying to make sure they have a good taste in their mouth when you walk away, because we're going to be back. And we want them to think, if you got a 10 o'clock appointment, you want to be there knocking on the door at 5 to 10, thank them repeatedly, take care of business, and get out of there,
Well, and the other side of it is you guys are only a very limited number of personnel, whereas if all the other people are looking at it going, hey, you do have a problem, contact the weed board or whatever, and hopefully, that will help too. So,
those letters generated, like I said, a lot of phone traffic, and the ones we went right at first were the ones who said, I think I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, let's get out there and, confirm, verify.
Yeah.
And the other ones were ones who were in, strategic locations. There's pieces of the river where there might only be one or two options as to how you get there.
Mm-hmm.
You better make friends with somebody real quick, or you're out of luck. So, that, and then the people that were real apprehensive or just had questions about what treatment would entail, and is it going to injure my dog or my kids? Can I be home? Put them at ease. Let them know.
And originally, Michael, a lot of the calls were, no, I don't want you guys in my property. But then they started to talk to neighbors, and one of the neighbors said, yeah, and they wanted to, and they had it done. Then they called me back and said, okay, I talked to my neighbor, and they said, okay.
Yeah,
so the list started to turn the other way, but it was interesting to see.
Their children didn't grow a third ear or anything,
Well, when you get up on the Little Washougal, even parking is really problematic. If you don't have a friendly up there where you can pull off the road and have a place to park your rig, it's not like there's a lot of options to park a rig and go walking. It's dangerous stuff.
Good.
Sounds real good.
Yeah, and like Kent was saying, it'd be great if we could get it, keep it ongoing, this grant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like you say, but you don't know, it's every 2 years. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, at least, moving ahead, like I say, we've got a better picture of that piece of the county than we've ever had before. At worst case scenario, we have that advantage moving ahead.
Is that the primary hot spot for the knotweed, is the Washougal and Little Washougal?
It's one of them.
Okay.
Yes, we've done a lot of work on the East Fork. Mm-hmm. That was a disaster, and we've really made tremendous strides on the East Fork.
We've
done a lot of really good work on the East Fork. But those are kind of two, when you start talking about where you want to allocate time and resources, those are two that... usually the first two that pop up, I think.
Yeah.
And then we have sort of an informal partnership going with Clark Public Utilities. They handle the Salmon Creek watershed. That's where they do all their planting work. And so they've been attacking knotweed in that watershed for us the last 5 years probably.
So at least that's part that you don't have to worry about and everything,
We stay north and east, and they stay in the
middle. And take that. Why are they so big on the on Salmon Creek?
So the history with Clark Public Utilities is they started their planting projects to offset the discharge of warmer temperature water from their their water facilities into Salmon Creek. And so it's to offset that, and I think it started out as a requirement, and it's become more of a PR thing for them. You know, all of the energy and the water that they do in the county, the ratepayers, you know, they do this kind of thing to say, look, we're also good environmental stewards. So all the planting projects and restoration they've done, now they're looking at it like, well, knotweed's a problem for our restoration project, so we want to attack that as well.
Sure you can't train beavers to go in, or nutria to go in and take out the knotweed?
Yeah. Actually, that's one of the problems. When they start knocking it down, it spreads by fragments.
Yeah, right. And spread it.
And that's one of the ways when we were surveying you, you'd find a place like an eddy or a place where especially up in the way upper end of the Little Washougal, it'll settle into these little almost like marshy areas before it takes off again. And you know, you're sitting there and you're just scanning the banks for, you know, anything that had floated downstream and hit high ground or, you know, settled out in those slower areas, you know. It's like, I thought it was a mirage. We just kept going and going, you know, several miles of stream is nothing. It's just,
oh, really?
We're missing something. It can't be this. And then all of a sudden, here we go. Counted my chickens before they hatch. Now this is where the mess starts.
Okay.
All right. Any other general discussion?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, how did you come out on the certified hay program this year? Did you have about the same number of people and same number of acres, or?
It was pretty close, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really similar to last year.
Pretty stable.
A little bit of an increase, not like we saw the year before that.
Yeah, because I think there was like 1,255 acres this year.
Yeah, where it was more like 1,000 the year before.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So still pretty good numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm always encouraged to see that. I know, Jerry has said it didn't necessarily equate to more dollars in the pocket necessarily. I just hate to see people on some of this crap that they pull out and sell and everything and sheesh, yeah.
Well, so. Yeah, and I think our numbers, it probably would have been about a wash because our numbers were probably skewed a little tiny bit by that temporary foray we took into Cowlitz too, just a pinch.
Yeah.
But, we did them a solid there for a short window, but it was pretty stable, pretty steady.
Yeah, there was some good stuff right across from Walmart there on that new cut through Rasmussen, but that fill to the south side of that was all fill dirt, and somebody went there and mowed and baled it.
I
don't think there was a blade of grass in it. They bailed it.
We had a couple of new newbies. Kara got one, and I got the other. That were under the impression that it was just kind of a rubber stamp kind of deal, you know. And one of the guys has a significant amount of property. His last name's Traeger, Brandon Traeger. Anyway, he ended up with a lot of Robert's old fields. And he just thought he was going to have us come out there and roll through and just sign off on stuff. And so if he actually does what he's supposed to do moving ahead, that could change our numbers by 400 acres. He had some garbage out there, and he was expecting to get a pass, and it just doesn't work like that.
The other one I wanted to ask about was tansy ragwort. Are you seeing as much? Or I know we had a bump in tansy ragwort, and it's like the moths and everything, you know, must have hit a low ebb or something or other and stuff, but has it gone back down? Has it settled back, you know?
You know, I don't know if there is a norm. To me, over the last few years, I think it's just kind of one of those things that just ebbs and flows. You know, we get a wet year, we get a dry year, it's up, it's down, and the
the cinnabar population is always like a year behind. Mm-hmm. The tansy population peaks while that's crashing, and then the cinnabar population is up when we have a lean year for tansy, if mm-hmm. there is such a thing. And really, you know, we paid pretty close attention over the last few years, and I think we've all kind of concluded that the cinnabar is a big help. But it's really about the same thing as a mowing, because that tansy, if we don't get an early frost, that moth completes its life cycle, and the tansy snaps back and it flowers this tall, you know, before first frost. Anyway, I mean, it's not to say it's of no value, but it about equates to a mowing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I found some pretty good patches that are flowering already. I mean, or have flowered this fall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, afterwards, some that I picked off and stuff like that, and been going around, and there's a little pocket of that little bugger that flowered in the fall.
Since we had such a long open fall, I think gave it an opportunity, huh?
Well, we run into that every fall. You know, people who have done everything right, they've complied, they've been good, you know, done everything we've asked of them, and then if we don't get a frost till a little bit later on, you know, they're if they mowed and didn't do herbicide, that stuff pops back up. The day's short and it flowers and tries to go to seed when it's 4, 5, 6 inches tall, you know, and you hate to go back and bang on their door and just, you know, technically it's not supposed to produce seed, but gee, if the guy's already mowed it 2 or 3 times this year, you know, you don't want to, what are you going to do? Puts you in a bad spot. You don't want to go back there and, ruin the whole situation, all the good vibes, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
I think with that approach, keeping good education, like early on, the idea of what will happen if they do it a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can have a conversation without saying, look, you got to get out there and mow again, or you're going to get the hate mail is going to start again, or we're going to start, you know, getting heavy handed because. You know, we know by that time of the year, you know who the people who are genuinely making an effort and who the headaches are, you know, and it's unfortunately, you can't control the weather, you know. If frost would have came 3 weeks earlier, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Yeah. But, gee, we didn't have a frost until November this year.
Exactly. Yeah. Precisely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the only other thing I wanted to bring up is, I don't know if you all know, Charles is retiring. It's first of the year, is that right, you
think? I think so.
That's what I remember too.
I think so. Calling it quits.
Yeah, and I called him to ask him if he was going to be at the meeting, which he gave me a maybe. Now we know the answer to maybe. Mm-hmm. But to ask him about his replacement, because the extension agent is supposed to be part of our hijinks here. But
those stink bug things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They don't know if they're going to. They don't know when they're going to replace Charles' position. To make a long story short, chair may continue to be vacant for a while. I guess we'll look into it next year, or when we get into February, March of next year, and see who or what's going to fill that.
So, could be. We do an endowment with OSU, and they're working to have an endowment for the vegetable chair and stuff, and that, you know, they will not fill the position until the growers come up with large enough endowment to fill the chair. In the meantime, the fruit industry has they've come up with an endowment, so okay, they're filling that chair and that has retired and stuff. So, yeah, you know, it's like, oh gosh, man, you know, so we're all trying to get, you know, money together for the endowment, and they're looking for $500,000 endowment to fund, or, you know, pretty much fund the chair, and then they would make up the difference. But so I don't doubt to see is Clark County would probably do the same thing with the extension agent. You know, is
it?
Well, since Kent always brings a buddy with him, maybe we can make him the extension agent.
Let me know when it gets up to that $500 million.
Yeah. No, $500,000.
Okay.
$500,000. But what they're doing is using it as an investment. And then using the money out of that, but then they will also match it or whatever OSU is and stuff. So yeah.
$500,000, that'd buy a lot of horses.
Yeah, that's only what, $40,000 a month or a little more.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're nearing end then. So we'll wait and see on that.
Yep. Did we have how did the stuff go at the county fair? I think our last meeting was before the county fair and stuff.
Attendance was down noticeably.
at just the booth or fair total?
I think the fair total was pretty flat.
I think they were up again.
Okay.
Another year of up higher numbers generally attending the fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But not the booths.
All the booths. Yeah, it was interesting. It was like people were either there to walk the main drag or get to a show.
Hmm.
We just had a lot. I was there on the first Saturday of the fair, which is usually absolute chaos, and I think I had 50 some people there for the whole
really
night. I just kept waiting, because it usually comes in tidal waves. You know, you stand there, twiddle your thumbs for a minute, and then here comes a dozen people all at once, you know, and it just never happened.
Huh.
Because we broke all kinds of records this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you'd be the one to know about fair attendance, wouldn't you?
Well, the rides, I mean, what's his name, Butler Amusement. Last year he broke a ride record, the biggest day he's ever had at any of his plays.
It's not Burback anymore?
We haven't had Burback in a long time.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Butler Amusement. But we had three days now that even beat last year's.
Wow.
And all-time records of any place he plays, like Portland and all the big fairs, other big fairs. And then our food courts took off the doors. We were to get the numbers now.
That's just from me buying out shit.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. But
huge, huge numbers. Our bottom line's like $600,000+ this year, and it was $300,000+ last year.
Well, you can see the evenings of people just streaming for the shows. I'm sure all the shows did well, too.
They did well. Of course, all the motorized events always do well.
Yeah.
So, but we're going back. We're looking at 5 more this year again. So, that bringing them back to the concert area or our side of the road is just been terrific. We knew it would be, but you know, the county was pushing to use the amphitheater, and we finally said no, we're not going to. A couple of years ago, came back to the grandstand, and all those vendors, the beer we sell, all the vendors,
everything around that,
yeah,
and all the other vendors. I mean, of course, when the show starts, you're right, everything empties, and then hopefully they come back out for a while, but probably not to that side.
Well, yeah, like I say, you could look at it at the midway, you know, that main drag in the middle there, and it was just shoulder to shoulder, man. It was just packed with people, but they were all, like I say, heading for rides or food or the show, I guess. Yeah. The traffic through the barns wasn't typical. It'd be interesting to see if we, I guess, run into the same thing next year. We'd have to call it a trend.
Yeah.
Because we were down a little bit the previous year, and we were down a little bit more this year, so...
Interesting, going through that barn.
Yeah, you need to just put like a piece of plywood out there on the main drag and just detour everybody.
In through. Yeah,
and run them through there.
I think it's going to take a little bit more than one piece of plywood.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Big concrete barriers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Well, I'll have to keep an eye on that. I'll have to mention that to Joan. Okay, anything else? So we'll look for the bee policy next board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And,
look at this.
And it's the next meeting is not just bee policy; it's the weed list. We review the weed list.
Yeah. Trees okay. Concern. Formalize the state.
And trees of concern. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Weeds and trees of concern. And
okay.
So we got a lot to do next time.
Yeah.
Okay, and that'll be on the 22nd of February at this point. Okay. Okay, so I'll adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Everyone have a great Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, you guys too.
You too.
We'll see you till. And a happy new year. All that good stuff.
Take a couple of my cookies for the road.
Oh, by the way, we did feed him.
Yeah. Yeah. I need him like a hole in the head. But, yeah.